Graham Makepeace-Warne, CEO of Manx Wildlife Trust, and this episode is about cetaceans, so whales, dolphins, and basking sharks. And this clearly is really an important episode for an island like the Isle of Man. 85% of our territory is marine, and our marine world is important to us as people, as a food source, but also our wildlife. And there's nothing I like more than going to the coast and doing a sea watch and looking out for some of these really interesting and enigmatic species.
And just to expand on what Graham was saying there in the introduction, we've expanded this episode out a little bit to look at all things marine, not just baskers and cetaceans. Why not? So I'm off to meet the person who knows, Laura Howe from the Manx Wildlife Trust, if she's not at sea. Well, here we are for the last in this little mini series of Wild Man or Wild Thing. You never quite remember what it's called. And we are actually down by the seaside, just down in Douglas Harbour, having a look around. And I thought we'd sort of cast our eyes out to see what we can see. And obviously, the island's surrounded by sea, a lot of people walking out fishing down, a lot of swimmers these days. The sea is very much an integral part of the island's wildlife scene. And wherever you go, there'll be something to see, whether you're out in the wilds or, as we are here, actually just down by Douglas Quayside looking out. Come up to meet with Laura and talk things marine. You were just saying, as we were walking down here, it's been a pretty busy summer from your point of view. Oh, look at that. As we speak, you see, I say there's always things. Two herons right in front of us coming down. Glorious.
And you're talking about things in Douglas Harbour. A couple of days ago, we had a common seal in the harbour itself. So
that cropped up on the Manning line. Some people thought it was stranded.
No, it's obviously come in when the gate had been dropped on the marina and had come in and was just resting up, and has obviously gone back out a day later. So yeah,
it was always safe, as it were. And just even around the harbour here, you see sort of plenty of life. Like I said, we've just got the herons down. Anything else you're likely to see sort of harbour-wise at this time of year? Obviously, thousands of people using Douglas Harbour around Douglas Harbour every day.
Well, the black guillemots are one of the firm favourites. They've mostly left now, but there will be, going into the winter, we'll probably start seeing them again. And of course, just going outside of the harbour, round down to Marine Drive, minke whales, it's that kind of time of year again where we'll start to see them off Marine Drive, feeding on the schooling, spawning fish there.
And we do get, I have actually seen a minke once, so this is this time of the year, sort of September, October-ish, good time to keep an eye open.
Well, they start generally on the west coast, sort of in the late summer, and they're basically following the herring that come just to spawn off Douglas. So they sort of follow them round from the west coast, and then come to the autumn, and they'll be spawning just off Douglas, and that's why the minkes are here to feed on them. And that will also bring in some of our small shark species and things like that. So, you know, there's been some great footage in the past of spur dog and tope and things like that off here.
So these are the smaller sharks?
Yes, our smaller sharks. Well, small as in the tope can be about 70 pounds. So,
oh, that's
so
not that small,
but not basking shark size, let's put it like that.
I mean, obviously the basking shark, probably the one that people know best. They know nothing about sharks, so they've heard of the basking sharks. And I know it's not a specific area that you necessarily work in. The numbers of late, though, seem to have not been around the Manx coast what they were 10, 15 years ago.
Yeah, that's absolutely right. Numbers have dropped considerably in the last few years. And there's different opinions as to why that is.
It seems that they're sort of over by the Irish coast. There still seems to be plenty of sightings.
Yes, there is. They seem to be skipping the Irish Sea now and going up the west coast of Ireland. And some of the thoughts is that maybe it's the cable that's been laid across the Irish Sea that maybe causing them to not be able to pass that barrier. It's to do with electrical signals.
I've heard that.
EMF, yeah, electromagnetic fields. But it's also a very likely possibility that it's a change in the plankton. DEFRA have done, had a couple of students look at the historic data sets of the plankton sampling, and it has changed over time. And we think that maybe that's had an impact, that the plankton that the basking sharks would feed on is now not here. So that's why the sharks aren't here.
And that's, I suppose, what a lot of these species, they sort of go where the food is.
Absolutely, and this will be an effect of climate change and warming temperatures. The plankton of choice, these copepods that the basking sharks feed on, won't like it. So they'll probably be in cold waters, like off the west coast of Ireland, where you've got cold Atlantic waters coming through, whereas it's probably a bit warmer in the Irish Sea.
And you mentioned it, so what other type, you mentioned a couple of other type of sharks, how many sort of types do we get around these waters normally?
We have quite a few species of sharks, actually. We're working with DEFRA at the moment to write biological action plans for our sharks and then our rays and skates at the moment. And a lot of that is working around the shark tagging work that we've been doing with DEFRA. We know that we've had some good recaptures over the last few years for taupe, and they've been travelling as far as places like the Bay of Biscay, Portugal, Spain. So we know they're travelling big distances.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, all of them were landed for market. So that's a real problem, and it just shows that the issues around low numbers in our shark species. It's a global issue that we need to tackle together, not just as an island nation, but we can do our bit to protect them while they're here.
So this is seen maybe not so much over here, but in parts of Europe as very much a sort of a feed or food species.
Yeah, and sometimes some species like the cat shark or dogfish, as a lot of people know them, are landed for bait for a lot of the pots and things like that. So there's also issues around them being used for bait as well, so that can be a problem too.
And are people, would you sort of see them, or are they sort of species you're only likely to notice if you're either doing subaqua work or swimming or fishing or such like?
Yeah, surprisingly enough, the shark species that we don't see very many when we're diving. We tend to see the cat sharks or the dogfish, but otherwise we don't tend to see the other shark species. They are quite timid, maybe a bullhuss, but they do seem to avoid divers. I think maybe it's the bubbles or the noise we generate. They don't really like it, but yeah, we don't see very many underwater.
You were just mentioning the tagging there. I know we've spoken in the past with the basking shark survey who are doing satellite tagging. Are these satellite tags, or are they just sort of like straight tags that you might sort of put onto a bird?
Yeah, so they're little streamer tags, so they're like very thin sort of noodles, and they have a unique code on them and our address so that they know when to report them. And the idea is that once they're tagged, we take measurements and sex them and know what species they are. We release them, and the idea is that when they're recaptured, you know, 2 months, 2 years, however long later down the line, we know where that individual came from. We've got a location of exactly where it came from, and we can re-measure it, and we can look at it growth rates and things like that. So it's really useful biological data that helps us understand how well our shark population is doing.
And then the other thing people do see, I say people because it's never me, but I mean famously on the cetacean front, the dolphins, Starlight and Moonlight. I have yet to see Star. I must be one of the few people on the Isle of Man who have still not seen Starlight and Moonlight.
Really? Oh, wow. I've seen them a few times now around the coast. I mean, we've seen them. We were camping up in the north and we saw them up there, really quite close inshore. Obviously, being based in Peel with the office there, I see them in Peel, you know, go for a walk at lunchtime, and quite often they'll be in the bay. So, yeah, you really need to just get out a bit more.
I'm not getting
less time in the studio.
I'm not getting out. That's the problem, I think. So the pair of them, they're both bottlenose, I think, yeah?
Yes, they are, yeah.
And is this a sort of good time? I think sort of back end is usually quite a good time for seeing bottlenose around the Manx waters.
Yeah, it's a good time to see them, yeah.
And any of the others, I'm just thinking, obviously, things like harbour porpoise and Risso's dolphins. You get those in Manx waters as well. Do you come across those often in your aquatic travels?
I saw Risso's on Tuesday. Not Risso's. It was harbour porpoise on Tuesday. We were doing a trip down to the Calf, and we happened to see two or three harbour porpoise go past as we were heading down there. And yeah, we've seen quite a few harbour porpoise this year, actually, on various trips. So that's been quite nice. And a few, when we were out doing some research in the Western Irish Sea mud belt, we had a small pod of common dolphin come through as well. So yeah, it's really nice. We're still seeing quite a lot of cetacean life around at the moment. It's great.
And just give us a little bit more detail on that, because I have heard of the mud belt, but I have confessed, I don't really know exactly where it is, or, I mean, is it just that, just a sort of thick layer of mud?
Yeah, so off the west, sort of west and sort of southwest coast of the island, sort of between here and an island, there is a mud area known as the Western Irish Sea mud belt. And basically it's the only bit of mud that we have in our territorial waters, and it overspills into Irish waters. It's a very important habitat because it's really good for carbon sequestration. And DEFRA have been doing a lot of work, particularly Blue Carbon Team, looking at the mud and its sequestration rates. And that's partly why we've got the three temporary closed areas there as well, to look at the impacts of mobile gear on mud. And obviously, you know, it releases when you put dredge through, in the same way you put a plough through a field, it releases carbon. So we want to look at the impacts of that, whether that, how much carbon is lost, but also it gives us an opportunity to look at recovery of species. So sea pens that we find in mud are very sensitive to physical damage, so it gives them the opportunity to look at those and the recovery maybe of those. And of course, the fisheries department within DEFRA have set up a creel pot nephrops fishery, so scampi fishery, trial to see how that goes as well. So obviously using pots is much less of a destructive method of fishing for them. So we're hoping that will become a sustainable fishery, and it's great because it's diversification again of the Manx fleet. So it's great.
So is the mud belt area, is that protected in any way or not?
Currently it isn't. There's only these three temporary closed areas, but we're very hopeful that they will become permanently closed to mobile gear, as much of our marine nature reserves are now. And that will enable us to achieve our 30 by 30 targets in the marine environment. So that would be a brilliant win.
So a lot of this work, as you're saying, it's conservation work, and also, as you're saying, sort of scientific work, doing sort of monitoring, seeing what's going on. And I suppose it's this idea of working with the sea, and that clearly, you know, we have fishermen, people eat fish, people eat scampi, lobster, all the rest of it. There's an industry based on the sea, and it's seeing how we can do this sustainably going forward.
Absolutely. And I think the Isle of Man is a really brilliant example of like conservation, government and industry working together to benefits everybody. I mean, it's absolutely a biosphere nation. That's exactly what it's about. It's about people, economy and the environment thriving. And this is what we've really managed to achieve with the marine environment, is where industry, you know, can still fish and still have a livelihood, but they do it in a sustainable way that benefits them, the wildlife and our ecosystem. So it's really positive to see this kind of work. And I think the Isle of Man are a really good example of that.
How many marine nature reserves have we got around the island now?
We've got 10 now.
10? Gosh, yeah. See, I'm way behind. I thought it was still in single figures.
10. So it makes up about 50% of our 0-3 territorial waters, and makes up about 10% of our total territorial waters. And obviously there's a lot of talk around this 30 by 30 targets. And so that's 30% of land and sea protected by 2030. So if we manage to make these temporary mud areas permanently closed to mobile gear and turn them into marine nature reserves, that would then allow us to achieve our 30% in the marine environment alone, which would be fantastic.
And is it difficult to monitor these? Because unlike being on land, of course, you can't sort of stick up fences or stick up posts saying protected area. Are these, I mean, how are they delineated? Is it sort of things put down at sort of like radar spots? How does it work?
Yeah, so things, there'll be notice to mariners that can go out explaining that the areas are closed. There's obviously a lot of dialogue with industry around this as well, local and otherwise, because there are several Irish boats who also fish in that area. I mean, up until recently, there weren't Manx boats going in there because nobody was really... we didn't have the quota for nephrops, so DEFRA Fisheries Department have been working very hard to get the quota to allow this creel pot fishery to happen.
And so is the plan to extend even more of these nature reserves, or are we sort of staying on 10, or the plan to grow those?
That's probably a question for DEFA, but obviously from a conservation perspective, the more protection we have, the better. Obviously, all of our marine nature reserves currently have been within the 0-3 because we have the territorial fishing rights solely for those. So there's nothing in the 3-12, so it would be nice to see some expansion into that area going forward. But yeah, that's a conversation for DEFA, I think.
That's for DEFA to make that choice. Yeah. Now, you mentioned earlier on, again, we were talking the calf, and I know you've done a lot of work down at the calf there, perhaps. But famously, people go down to the Sound, and it's the one place you can be guaranteed, I think, pretty much year-round, seeing some of our seal colonies around the island.
Yeah, it's a great place to spot them, and you get to see them relatively closely without too much disturbance, because you can see them from Kittland, and because there's that water between you, they feel much more comfortable.
And this time of the year, it's sort of coming to pupping time. We're talking again, when it comes to seals, we are talking, is it predominantly or exclusively grey seal?
So in Manx waters, we predominantly have grey seals. They probably make up 95% of our population, but we do have a small, probably 5% of commons. Prime example, we had the common seal in the harbour here earlier this week, but it's now grey seal pupping season. Commons pup much earlier in the year. They're sort of July, August time. So we're now just monitoring the grey pupping season.
And is it easy for a sort of, you know, a non-marine biologist, if you just spot a seal in the water, is it any easy way of taking one from the other? I'm assuming one's sort of grey and one's common. Are there any distinguishing marks some people can see?
They are slightly different. So greys generally are larger in size, much bigger. It becomes difficult if you've got a juvenile grey and a common to sort of tell them apart. But the common seals have a cuter face and a sort of a smaller head to body ratio, whereas the greys have these sort of bigger, chunkier heads and long noses, Roman noses, and they tend to have larger spots compared to the commons. And sometimes if you can get close enough, and I'm not suggesting you get very close, but if you've got binoculars, you can look at the nostril shape. The nostril shape helps. I think, if I remember it the right way around, commons have V-shaped nostrils and grey seals have a more parallel nostril, and that's another way to tell. But the long Roman nose is usually kind of a giveaway, whereas the commons have a little sort of like little more of a button nose. They look a bit cuter.
Who doesn't like a cute seal? And I always think it's a bit of a sort of a misnomer, isn't it? You think the common ones on the Isle of Man aren't the predominant species.
Yeah, exactly. And it's the same with common dolphin. Not that common either. So, yeah, just because the name is common doesn't necessarily mean it is here. It might be somewhere else, but not here.
And so do you do a lot of your work with Manx Wildlife Trust as a marine officer there? Do you actually sort of monitor the populations down by the calf?
Not constantly down by the calf. We do ask the public to report their sightings to us to help us build up an idea of what's going on. But every few years we try and do an island-wide seal survey. So we've literally just completed that in August this year. I still haven't even had a chance to really process the data yet. And we did that with a thermal imaging drone for the first time. We were very lucky to have some financial support to be able to afford that. And that's enabled us to be able to go and fly the drone around all of the island except for the airport. We did that by boat to get an idea of number and distribution of seals. So we're seeing a lot of seals, for example, up at the Point of Ayre now in the last 10 years. Before that, you wouldn't have seen the numbers. I mean, some 100 plus at times. So the question is this new colony a result of a population increase in numbers around the island, which is probably partly, or is it a displacement from somewhere else? And so we're hoping to look at the data and compare it as best we can from previous surveys to look at how things have changed over time in terms of where the colonies are. So the public sightings data has been very helpful as well, that the public send to us in terms of numbers. And of course we spend on an annual basis monitoring the pups on the calf. So we've got the two volunteers, Alex and Bea, out there at the moment. I mean, that work has been going on since 2009. So they're out there for their 10 weeks monitoring. So we've got around 30 pups have been born, 30 plus pups now. And that'll carry on until sort of mid-November. So yeah, we're seeing good numbers of pups coming through now, which is great.
And do we know, I mean, sort of year on year, do we know whether the sort of seal population around the Isle of Man stays sort of relatively static, grows or shrinks, or does it alter with the seasons?
generally with the pups, because we've got that annual trend, we're seeing that they're generally increasing. They might have a bit of a plateau, or and then sometimes there'll be a bit of a spike, but generally they're on an increase, but there's only a certain amount of capacity and space on the calf. So at some point we really are going to max out in terms of the numbers that can be born there. But I think from looking at the data so far from the island-wide counts, and we can compare back to sort of the 2007 report that Manx BirdLife did for seals and the one that we did in 2017, numbers definitely seem to be increasing for seals, which is a good sign. And it's also being seen throughout the UK as well, that grey numbers are really increasing, which is a positive.
And I know I've asked this before, and I never remember the answer particularly, but it always strikes me as sort of as contradictory that just as the weather's getting worse is when all the seals start pupping, when you'd have thought, well, why don't you do it in the summer when it'd be much better? I'm assuming that's sort of food-based again.
Yeah, absolutely. It's linked with food. The later you leave it, the more availability there is. So sort of obviously in the springtime, you get all the blooms, and then you get all the fish larvae, and then the fish grow, and they get eaten by bigger fish, and it just sort of, you get a good abundance in sort of the autumn, as we would on land with harvest time. So it all sort of links in with that sort of cycle of life. So yeah, there's plenty of food around for the females to feed on whilst they're pregnant. And of course, they need a lot of milk to feed those pups with. So it's food-wise, it's a really good time. Weather-wise, not so good. And with, climate change and more stormy conditions coming, this will become more and more of a problem.
And also, again, I know you've been doing work on the calf over the years, which I assume is still going on, which was looking at the puffin population.
Yeah, that's still going. In fact, we've extended the colony. We have a third colony now that we installed this year. And actually this year has been a really good year for puffins, both just generally sightings. So every trip I've done to the calf, I've seen several puffins, not just one, but like five or plus. And all three sites where we've put the decoys, we've had puffins landing. I was fortunate when I was on the calf in the summertime. We were out down towards the borough where our new colony is, and we were looking at some razorbill chicks there with the bird warden and the estate warden. And as we were leaving the site, a puffin flew in and landed on a rock not 50 metres from us. And so that was very, very exciting. So I'm very hopeful that next year might be the year that we have breeding puffin on the calf.
Wow. And that would be the first time in quite a few years?
Yeah, since the 80s, I think. Yeah.
Wow, that's very impressive, I must admit. And the decoys, they have been, because again, I remember talking when we first did them, this idea of putting them out, and this has sort of proved, in essence, successful by the sound of it.
Yeah, I think so. We're definitely, obviously I'm slightly biased. I think it's been successful, and the reason we're seeing more puffins around the island is because of the decoys. I can't really confirm
but
I'd like to think so. And it's been trialled in other areas, and it has worked. So we know that it does work elsewhere, so why not on the Isle of Man? So fingers crossed, I've got all my fingers and toes crossed for next year that we'll have pufflings.
Not, and that's what they're called, pufflings.
Yeah.
Love it, pufflings, love it. Oh, that's got to be great, hasn't it? And we should say before we leave the seals, and that we've just mentioned that it is obviously pupping season. Now, you do, obviously, watching them down the calf, that's one thing. You do occasionally, people see them washed up or they're down on shores around the island themselves. I see a pup, sometimes seemingly stranded on its own.
Yes, absolutely. So this time of year, the pups, when they're born, usually it's on a secluded beach away from people. That's how mum likes it. But sometimes if there's been storms, or they just swim off by themselves, and they might end up on a more public beach. We've had them on, Douglas and Ramsey. We've had one recently in Port Erin, actually. Often people wonder what to do. They're fine. Generally, what we would do is we get our seal sitters. We've got a lovely bunch of volunteers who will go and check on them. But please don't put the seals back in. Yes, they are marine animals, but actually the seal pups, the grey seal pups, aren't particularly good swimmers when they're first born. And actually they spend the majority of their time until they're weaned on land, resting, sleeping, being babies, basically, which is just kind of lying there, not doing an awful lot, and just sort of sleeping. And that gives them time to grow and rest and develop and digest all that lovely, nice milk that mum has fed them. Often mum won't be seen, because if the pup has moved to a really public beach, she won't want to come near the pup. She'll come in at night time when there's nobody around, and then they might swim off together to somewhere more appropriate. So the key message is, please don't get close. I mean, dogs on leads. We've just produced a guidance leaflet about how to behave around wildlife, marine wildlife, whether it's in the water or on land. And the key message is a minimum of 50 meters. And if a seal looks at you, that is technically disturbance. The pups are much more inquisitive, but the mums are very, very shy and will not approach. So lots of space, lots of distance, and generally just leave them well alone. We'll get the seal sitters out to sit with them and monitor them and make sure that they are just resting. Sometimes they're sick or they've got an injury, particularly if we've had stormy weather, they might have got damage, you know, from being bashed on a rock or something like that. So we want to make sure that they're safe and okay, and that's what the seal sitter's role is to do. But unfortunately, a lot of people will, because they are very cute, will go up to them and get very close. But mum, if she feels that badly threatened, she will abandon the pup. So the idea is the seal sitters will sit and watch them, ensure that everything is okay and happy. And if not, then we will think about what the next steps are. And very last case scenario, because it's stressful, is to bring the seal into rehab. If it's life or death, we'll bring them into the seal rehab, where they're looked after by the wonderful Anne, who is amazing and looks after all of our seal pups and juveniles as well. If they, once they're weaned, sometimes they haven't quite found their feet in terms of feeding themselves and being a seal by themselves. So sometimes we end up with the juveniles as well. So this is our busy time now until sort of probably February, March time. So it's busy time, but if you see a seal and you're concerned, do give us a call, but please don't put it back into the water. It just needs space to rest and sleep. But if there's any doubt, please just call Manx Wildlife Trust, call the office, and we can give you some advice or get the seal sitters out if need be to come and rescue them.
Tell you what, you've got a fascinating job, haven't you?
I do. I absolutely love it. Yeah, I've spent a lot of time out in the field this summer and it's been really nice. And just, yeah, you know, going and seeing the wildlife, it's really, really rewarding, and I really enjoy it.
Wild thing.